Happy Easter and welcome to Trinity Sermons. And thanks so much for joining us today for our weekly sermon here at Trinity Church Streetsville. We're a church located in the village of Streetsville in Mississauga, Ontario. And we're so glad that you are with us today for our message of good news on Easter. A reading from the Gospel of John, chapter 20, verses 1 to 18. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. They did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them what he had said these things to her. The word of the Lord.
How many of you know what your very first words were? Your baby words, when you were a baby. What were the first words that ever came out of your mouth? Today I want to talk, and not about last words, but I want to talk about first words. Just a hands up. You don't have to tell me what they are, but hands up if you know what your first words were. Yeah, not a lot of people know what their first words were. You know, I think it's an interesting topic. Some parents actually have a baby book, and in that baby book they write down like, "Oh, this was baby's first step," or "This is baby's first smile," or "This is, you know, baby's first poop," or "This was, you know, baby's first word." And I actually asked some of our staff here. I said, "Hey staff, you know, what were some of your first words?" And some of them got back to me I'll just give you like a couple for examples. For example, Libby, our worship director, Libby McGrath, I asked her, I said, "Libby, what were some of your first words?" And I said, "Hey, Libby, what was your first word?" That's a picture of Libby when she was just little. And her first word was no. And actually, if you know Libby, you're like, "Yeah, that kind of makes sense. That kind of fits, right?" And then I asked our amazing media director, Alex Stevens. I said, "Hey, Alex, you know, what were your first words?" And so he called his folks and he asked them, and his first word was "mama." Doesn't he look like a mama's boy? I mean, he's a total mama's boy. Absolutely. He said those words that they said while they were on a road trip to Nova Scotia. And then I asked Elizabeth Archer, our amazing online engagement director. I said, "Elizabeth, what were your first words?" "Oh, wait a second. No, you're not seeing double. Do you guys know that Elizabeth Archer is an identical twin?" She's an identical twin. Right. So the first question I want to ask you is, which one is Elizabeth? On the left or the right? How many think left? How many think right? All right. And you're right. She is the one on the right, Elizabeth. And what do you think Elizabeth's first words were? Papa. That's what her folks told her. And so just for full transparency, this is a picture of me when I was a kid. I don't know what is going on with that hair. It's like electric. I asked my folks, I said, you know, what was my first word? And I have to say, I was a little bit surprised at this one. But they said my first word was kitty. Kitty, which if you know me, you would know that cats are not necessarily my favorite animal. But anyways, you know, kitty it was. Kitty it was. So there you have it. There's four amazing first words. No, mama, papa, kitty. And of course, all parents think the first words their kids say are absolutely amazing. Whenever there's a first word, they get on the phone, they call grandma and grandpa. They'll say, you'll never guess what he said. He said kitty. But first words, in a real way, actually are quite amazing because the first word somebody utters, it's not just noise anymore. It's not just goo goo and gaga. It's actually a signal. They're actually trying to tell us something. It's one of the first forms of human expression. It's they're telling us, giving us a clue about who they are and what they're all about. So first words are very, very powerful. Now, after Jesus was crucified, oh my goodness, Jesus had spoken so many amazing words throughout his life. But after he was crucified, his enemies thought we finally silenced him. No more Jesus and no more words. In fact, we spent the last seven weeks looking at the famous last words that Jesus spoke. But they had finally put him to death and he was in the tomb. No more Jesus, no more words. But on the third day, Jesus broke his silence and he rose from the dead and he took his first resurrection breath and then he took his first resurrection step and then he spoke his first resurrection words. And I got to tell you, folks, these were no ordinary words. These were no, you know, mama, papa, no, kitty, gaga, gugu. These four words that Jesus spoke were earth-shattering, world-changing, life-transforming words. You know, when you write a book, you know, the first line is so important. The movie, the first line of a movie is important. The first lyrics of a song are so important because they're telling us, they're setting the tone for where the rest is going. And these four words that Jesus spoke are telling us something. And they've been recorded and they have been preserved for 2,000 years for us, not in some baby book, but they've been preserved for us in the Bible by numerous gospel writers. And they are saying, look at what Jesus said. It's a signal. It's telling us something about who he is and where he is going. Today, I just want to look at the famous first words, the first four words that Jesus spoke after he rose from the dead. Okay, here we go. The first words that Jesus spoke, I want to say, I'm going to call them, they were words of caring. Words of caring. The risen Jesus approaches Mary Magdalene and she is crying and she's weeping and she's brokenhearted. And the first thing he says, the first words out of his mouth on this side of the tomb were, "Woman, why are you crying?" Now, I just want you to take that in for a moment. The first thing he says as a resurrected Lord is a word of compassion, a word of caring toward another person's deepest pain. Now, you have to understand the weight of these words. In order to understand that, you got to understand the context. In that society, women were often marginalized. And in that society, men totally dismissed the emotions of women. Now, of course, in our society, right, today, men are deeply compassionate and emotionally tuned in to the feelings of the women in their lives. But it wasn't always that way, right? Back then, it was different. Back then, a man would rarely even talk to a strange woman, much less go up to them and then ask them a deeply compassionate question. Hey, what's wrong? What's wrong? You're crying. What's going on? Tell me, why are you crying? These words resonate with every single one of us who has ever felt the sting of grief or loss in our own life. We can relate to Mary's tears. We've had times when we've been brokenhearted, when everything seems to have fallen apart. We've had times when we've been wandering around the garden aimlessly, looking in vain for some kind of comfort. And Jesus offers those words of comfort to all of us today. The question, why are you crying, is comforting, but it's actually also discomforting in another way, because that question forces you to kind of go deep into like ask the question, why am I crying? You got to go deep into those emotions, unpack all that. And sometimes we don't want to unpack all that. And so for that reason, sometimes we don't even want to cry. We don't want to draw attention to ourselves. And we fight back the tears because we just don't want to deal with all of that. But it is in our vulnerability. It is in our vulnerability that Jesus meets us. And tears, therefore, are not a sign of weakness. They're actually a gift in a way. In fact, Pope Francis, when he was looking at this very passage, he said this. He says, at times in our life, our tears become the glasses that enable us to see Jesus. Tears have a way of softening your heart. They have a way of opening your eyes to see Jesus is there, offering you a word of comfort and care. Jesus asks Mary, why are you crying? Jesus asks you this morning, why are you crying? Now, I know you're not crying, but what burdens are weighing on your heart today? Maybe you've lost someone. Maybe you've had a relationship fall apart. Maybe, things aren't going your way. Maybe your whole life feels like it's falling apart. I don't know, but why are you crying? These famous first words aren't just for Mary Magdalene. They are for you and they are for me, inviting us to acknowledge our pain, inviting us to embrace our vulnerability and find comfort and care in Jesus. What amazing first words. Amazing first words. Why are you crying, woman? But those are just the first. He's got some more to say. And so that takes us to the second amazing first words that Jesus ever spoke. And I'm going to call these words of searching. Right after he says, woman, why are you crying? He says, whom are you looking for? These are words of searching. Now, at first glance, these don't seem profound at all. Who are you looking for? That's just like, obviously, she's looking for the dead body of Jesus. She cannot find it. Jesus already knows the answer to that question. It's not profound. If you found me wandering around the shopping mall aimlessly and you said, Rob, who are you looking for? I'd probably say, I'm looking for my wife. And actually, you could probably, I hate shopping malls so much, you could probably also say, Rob, why are you crying, right? I really don't like shopping malls. But if the risen Jesus asks you, who are you looking for, that is different. That's a different question. That is a deeper, deeper question. And here's the problem with that question. We often don't know what it is we're looking for. You know, Bono, U2, the famous song, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. When he sings that chorus again and again, there's an anguish in his voice, and rightly so, because it really hurts us. It's really hard when you can't find what you're looking for. But what's even worse than that, is when you're not even sure what it is that you are looking for. Many of us spend our lives with this indistinct longing that we just don't know how to satisfy. We want something. We're looking for something, but we just don't even know what that thing is. You know, King Charles, he spoke of his belief that for all the advantages of science, there remains deep in the soul this persistent, unconscious anxiety that something is missing. And while Charles and Diana certainly didn't get along all the time, they agreed on this point, because Diana once spoke of an overwhelming sense of loss and isolation that undermines our efforts to cope with the complexities of life. We know, she said, something is missing. Huh. Sometimes we think, oh, yeah, I know what's missing. If I were to go and get a university degree, then that feeling would go away. And it doesn't go away. We say, well, maybe if I could, you know, get a girlfriend or a boyfriend, it would go away. And we do, and it doesn't go away. Or maybe if I got married, or maybe if I got a job, or maybe if I finally made some money, or maybe if I finally, you know, made something of my life, got a reputation, got had some success, and it doesn't go away. It doesn't seem to matter how much food or how much money or how many TV sets or how many houses or cars or children or whatever we get. That feeling just never seems to go away. But here's the thing. When Jesus asks the question, who are you looking for? It's a question, yes, but it's also an answer. In these first words, he's actually saying, he is the fulfillment of your deepest longings. But 1,500 years ago, St. Augustine said, you've made us for yourself, Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. And these amazing first words, Jesus saying, look at your heart, Mary. Do some soul searching, Mary. He's inviting you to do the same. What are you looking for? Is it recognition? Is it success? Is it wealth? Is it happiness? Is it revenge? Right? You're here this morning. You're at church on Easter Sunday morning. What are you looking for? What we discover is underneath all of our searching for what, there is a who. Underneath our deepest longings for something, there is a someone who's the answer to our greatest desire. It's Jesus. Who are you looking for? These are amazing first words. They keep coming. The third of the fourth words that I want to share with you, I call a word of knowing. And this one, again, you're going to say, this does not seem like much, but man, oh man, it is powerful. Jesus says this, third. He says, Mary. Mary. Again, you might say, well, what's so amazing about that? But think about this. Think about this. The magnitude of the resurrection, how significant this event is. How is Jesus going to do the big reveal? How is he going to get the word out? Was he going to show up first to King Herod and say, here I am, I'm back, baby, right? Is that how he was going to do it? Or was he going to show up miraculously in the temple in front of crowds of people so they could all see him? Or maybe because Jesus is Jesus and God is God, he could find a way through to reveal to the whole world all at once through thunderclaps and lightning bolts and earthquakes that he is risen from the dead. But no, you know what Jesus does instead? He chooses one person, Mary. Right. Even a few moments earlier, he could have showed up. Mary and John and Peter were there, but he's like, no, too many. I just want one. I just want Mary. I want this to be personal. I want to be someone I know. I want it to be personal. The first time Jesus spoke to Mary, do you know what he called her? Remember, he said, woman. But this time, he says, Mary. And you know what she realizes when she hears that? She says, wait. He knows me. He knows me. Right? There is this deep longing in each and every one of us to be known, truly known. And yet at the same time, we're scared to death of being truly known because what if people reject us once they find out who we really are and once we reveal ourselves to a person? But as Ed Welch says, he said, to be truly known with nothing to hide is life at its best. Jesus knew Mary. He called Mary by name. Mary knew Jesus. At first, she didn't think she knew him. She thought he was the gardener, and she was probably walking away. But then he says, Mary, and she stops, and she says, wait. And maybe it was the tone of his voice, or maybe he said it like he always used to say it. I don't know what it was. But when he said her name, she said, hey, whoa, he knows me. Many people struggle feeling alone and unknown. We live in this world where real connections are like increasingly rare. And I know we're connected through technology and we're connected through social media, but the studies all tell us we are lonelier and more isolated than ever. We need to be known. You saw those baby pictures. From the time that we're babies, we have this desire to be connected, this desire for attachment with others. And as we grow older, that feeling and that need does not go away. These famous first words tell us Jesus knows us. Personally, Jesus knows us intimately. Jesus once said, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Maybe you're like Mary, and you're like totally overwhelmed by what life is throwing at you. And when we're overwhelmed, we cannot see Jesus, even if he is standing right in front of us. And yet, if we stop, and if we look, and if we listen, he's there. He's calling us, and he's calling us by name. He's inviting us into a relationship with him where we can be fully known and fully loved. So I want you to know, when Jesus says Mary this morning, he's not just saying Mary. He's also saying Andrew. He's saying Farida. He's saying Scott. He's saying Curlin. He's saying Elliot. He's saying your name. He's saying my name. Because Jesus knows you. He wants a relationship with you. I just want to add a little side note here. At churches like Trinity, it is sometimes hard to feel known, right? You're just like a face in the crowd. You might feel like just a face in the crowd even this morning. But just as Jesus wants to know you, we want to know you too. And so if you're new here this morning or you're visiting, we want to invite you into this community where you can become known and you can feel loved. It's hard to experience that on a Sunday morning, just sitting in a big crowd. But that's why at Trinity, we have these things that we call life groups. And these life groups, they provide a place where strangers can become friends, where you can start to get to know other people, and you can start to get to know Jesus as well. I just want to say, if you're at all interested in being known and going a little deeper in community here, visit our welcome desk after the service out there and ask the volunteers about life groups. Because like Jesus, we want to get to know you too. That brings us to the last first word. I said that right? The last first word of Jesus. And this may be the most amazing of all the words that Jesus spoke, because if Jesus didn't speak this fourth word, we never would have known the first, the second, and the third word. After his words of caring, and after his words of searching, and after his words of knowing, Jesus speaks a word of sending. He says, go and tell. When Jesus speaks these words, he sets a process in motion that will change Mary's life, it will change the disciples' life, it will change your life, it will change my life, it will change the life of every single human being on this planet. Because with these words, Jesus entrusts to Mary Magdalene a profound mission. Go and tell others what I have told you, that I am risen from the dead. And with these words, she becomes the very first messenger of the greatest news that humanity has ever heard. You guys might have known in the Bible, they use this word apostle. And apostle is just a fancy word, a Greek word for someone who is sent. And mostly when people think of apostles, they think, oh, Peter the apostle or Paul, the apostle Paul. But I got to tell you, the very first apostle ever was Mary Magdalene, because she was the very first one who ever went and told others the good news of Jesus. This amazing first word of Jesus, go and tell. Just, it reminds us that the resurrection is not merely a message for you. It is a message for you, for sure, but it's a message for you to take with you. It's a message for you to take with you today when you go home to your families. It's a message for you to take with you when you go to visit your friends later on this week, when you go back to work later on this week. Take that message with you. When you get together with your fiance, you're to take this message with you. When you get together with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, take this message with you, with your parents, with your kids, with your grand. You need to take this message with you, because if you have heard the story, you are to share the story. Jesus entrusted this message to one woman who lived in a hostile world, a culture that would overlook her and ignore her, a culture that would laugh at her when she told them about this, that would roll their eyes at the message she had. But that's who Jesus gave the message to. That's who Jesus sent. But Jesus believed and was confident that Mary could go and tell. And she did. And the rest is history. You wouldn't be here today if she hadn't gone and told. This is usually the part of the sermon that people hate. It's the part where the preacher tells us to go and tell others. And we don't like the idea of telling others, right? We're afraid of rejection. We're not confident to tell others, and we're insecure, and what if I look foolish, and all that stuff, right? Listen, if you don't know how to share this message, I just say, do it like Mary did it. Some people might be like, Mary did say, he's risen, I've seen the Lord. If that's you, if that's your style, go for it. Tell people that way. But actually, I think it's very interesting that what Mary really did is she told them that Jesus had said these things to her. Wait. What things did Jesus say to her? What things did Jesus say to her that she went and told them? Well, Jesus said words of caring. He said words of searching. He said words of caring to someone who was hurting. He searching for someone who was looking for something. Words of identity for someone who felt alone. You see, if Jesus' first words to Mary became Mary's first words to others, then that means they can become your first words too. So listen, if you don't know how to go and tell others, do what Jesus did. When you see someone who's hurting and grieving, go up to them and say, hey, why are you crying? What's going on? You seem upset. Do you want to talk about it? Can we get together? And as you show care and compassion to that person, you know what? They're going to see the risen Jesus in you. That's how you share this message, just like Jesus did. Right? You still don't know how? Then do it. Then again, do what Jesus did. When you come across someone who's lost, or they're like searching and they don't know what it is they're looking for, why don't you just say, hey, it looks like you're searching for someone. Who are you looking for? What are you looking for? Maybe I can help you find what you're searching for. And maybe you get together with them. Maybe you have a coffee with them. And maybe you have a conversation with them. Maybe you invite them to Alpha and you listen to some of their questions and you speak to them. And in that course of that, the risen Jesus will speak through you. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. Or do it like Jesus did when you come across someone who's just ignored, bullied, left out, a coworker, maybe it's a classmate, I don't know, and you speak words of knowing. Call them by name. Say, hey, it's Mary, right? It's Scott. Wait, aren't you Naomi? Isn't that who you are? Let them know you see them. Let them know you care about them. Give them the gift of a relationship, and they will see the risen Jesus in you. Those were Jesus' famous first words. Words of caring, words of searching, words of knowing, words of sending. Those were Mary's first words too, and they can be your first words as you go from this place into your homes, to your classrooms and community. Let these be our first words as we go and tell others. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Thanks so much for joining us today, and again, Happy Easter. Make sure to come back next week as we begin a new sermon series on how to read the Bible. This sermon was taken from the Easter Sunday, March 31st, 2024 sermon at Trinity Church, Streetsville in Mississauga, Ontario.